Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In this episode, I speak with architect, musician, and creative storyteller James Ray Polk. James is the founder of Music and Architecture and a member of the Mississippi Sawyers Bluegrass Ensemble. He has spent years exploring the way we not only see architecture, but we hear it and we remember it. James approaches music as an architect. The classical principles of rhythm, harmony, and composition overlap both of these passions. They are tools for shaping experiences, and those experiences become memories, and those memories define our lives. After years of refining his voice and following a lifelong dream, that journey starts back at Taliesin in Spring Green, Wisconsin, this June 8th, for a deeply personal start to his 2026 Organic Architecture Tour. So on June 8th, he is starting his 2026 Organic Architecture Tour in Spring Green, Wisconsin, at the home of Frank Lloyd Wright, Taliesin East. And this is to debut his album, Organic Architecture. James first discovered Taliesin when he reached the point of burnout. Not even 40 years old, he had built a strong firm of 15 people, designing nearly 1,000 projects and constructing over 600 buildings. But working 16-hour days, 6 to 7 days a week, wasn't sustainable. He nearly had a heart attack and decided it was time for a serious change. He took the next year to close down any open projects that everyone else in his firm found new work. After this breaking point, James found new life, much like a phoenix, the mythical bird that is reborn from its own smoldering ashes. James reconnected with his early love of music, happened upon Taliesin in Spring Green, Wisconsin, and in a whirlwind of a few days, he started a new life in Spring Green, Wisconsin, drafting the incredible architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright near his home. You can hear his full story in the Entree Architect episode 648 with James Ray Polk. And now James continues to harmonize architecture, music, and purpose into a single creative language, composing his own career as a soul practitioner. James, welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks for having me. It's great being here.
Well, that was a whirlwind.
That was a big introduction. That was...
And we're going into a new birth here with you doing a lot. Is this your first tour?
This is my first album. I've always been musical. I was musical as a kid. I was always sung in choirs. I was in band, trombone. You can see a trombone right there. Still pick it up from time to time. And took guitar lessons and piano lessons. And really was thought I was going to go into a career in music. And then saw Frank Lloyd Wright's stuff in books and textbooks. I took a architectural drawing class in high school because there wasn't an art class. I wanted to draw. I liked to draw. And met Frank Lloyd Wright's buildings there, and it blew my mind. The falling water, these cantilevers floating in air, Price Tower, this incredibly geometrically simple and complex at the same time, tower, and Johnson Wax with its lily pad columns, very, very expressive. And I thought, boy, these things have a soul. This is not just walls and roof. They have a soul, and I really wanted to do that. So I went headlong into a career in architecture, and said, now 40 years in, you told a little bit about the first half of my career. I took a sabbatical that wound up, I'll tell you where I wound up is in the Taliesin courts, because I was living across the street from Taliesin, and I would wander over, and one thing led, they needed a good solid bass in the bass section, so I fit the bill.
How big is that group? How big is the Taliesin chorus?
It started in 1932. Frank Lloyd Wright, when he started the School of Architecture, the curriculum was to go to Taliesin and work on Frank Lloyd Wright's projects. And that's how you would get an architectural education and learn by doing. Well, but there was a school and there was a curriculum. And part of the curriculum was that every, I don't know if they had semesters, but every section, every phase, however it's determined, the students always have to be taking a creative art, creative expressive art. So they would bring painters in to do painting workshops. Sculptors bring famous sculptors in, and you would do sculpture. But the chorus was kind of a catch-all. So if you didn't do anything else as an apprentice, you at least had to be in the chorus. So it's been going on since 1932, and I don't believe it's going on now. Or if it is, it's not. It's a community chorus. It's not the Taliesin chorus. I think it's the River Valley Singers or something. So I guess the chapter is closed. Effie Casey was the director for a long time. Tom Casey, structural engineer, longtime apprentice there, senior apprentice. He was there when Frank Lloyd Wright was alive. Very instrumental in the Marin County project. He and what he called the Magnificent Seven top apprentices went to San Francisco and produced the construction drawings for Marin County in a month and a half, working on three drafting boards. Three would work, and then our three or four drafting boards, and they would work and then sleep. And when the others were sleeping, the others would be working. So they would work round the clock for a month and a half. And that's a huge complex. So she retired, and it all, I think it's not in existence now, but it's always been between, maybe 25 and 40. So it's a reasonable course. It's a reasonable, I mean, we would sing, great works, sing Messiah. Well, I don't know the same Messiah stuff while I was there, but certainly, Brahms and, How Lovely Is Thy Dwelling Place, beautiful Brahms, piece from Brahms, Requiem, probably my favorite, and do that and some others. And then some quirky ones. Do you know Carmina Burana?
Not well, no.
I don't know the I can't remember the words to it, but by Karl Orff. The German composer. And there was one song that we did, I remember, it's like, some say Carmina, some say Carmana, some say Barina, some say Barana. Carmina, Carmana, Barina, Barana. Let's call the whole thing Orff.
That's wonderful. I love it. Now, were you singing in the same theater that has been renovated?
Yeah. So this is probably my sixth or seventh performance there.
Wow. And it was just renovated. Is this going to be one of the first performances, your organic architecture tour?
Right. I don't think it's the first, but it just opened this season, this spring season. So it's been closed for a couple of years. And so everything is spruced up, and there's a green room there now. And the acoustics are amazing, just amazing.
And how long did you live in Spring Green?
I think it was about 5 years, between 5 and 6 years. I moved there in 2000. And then by 2005 and 2006, I was teaching there at the school. And I hadn't intended to stay there. But for that long, but I was it happened, and I was doing work up there. I did a really cool straw bale house, designed a nice house that was in a short film called Earth Walls, right outside, maybe 12 miles south of Taliesin, straw bale house. So I did some work up, up there in Wisconsin. I was traveling back and forth too, because I had a client base in Mississippi, and there were a few selected individuals that I would do this and that. But mostly I was in Spring Green.
But that 2000 era was when you kind of were reborn as an architect and became a sole practitioner from then on?
Right, stripped down. Yeah. Well, I guess I was a sole practitioner before. I just had a lot of employees and was doing a lot of buildings. And but after the Taliesin experience, one of the things about Taliesin is that when I first went there, I was visiting a friend in Minneapolis, came back, took the last tour of the day, and we came around, and Taliesin was up there on the brow of the hill. And it really hit me emotionally and deeply, and it took me by surprise, completely by surprise. But in retrospect, that's why I was doing what I was doing for the last 20 years, was because of what this creative human being did who lived in this space, Taliesin. So it's not just the architecture. There's a lot of meaning there. So what it did for me is, number one, it was an affirmation I had suffered from physical, mental burnout. And I was just like, press the accelerator, nothing happens, kind of place. And I was questioning, why am I doing this? Just I literally almost had a heart attack. I could feel it about to, when I was wondering how I was going to make payroll. So you can tell I'm getting kind of emotional talking about it here. But what it did for me is to create an affirmation that, yeah, what I was doing, what I was pursuing was valuable, and it was what I needed to do. It was, my intuition was correct. This is what I needed to do.
And I love how you saw that again in Taliesin. It reminds me when you first described seeing Frank Lloyd Wright's work in books and saying it had a soul.
Yeah.
And this resonates with something I'm hearing from other architects in Entre Architect right now, is like they want to fall back in love with what they're doing. And so we're another 20 years after that experience, and here you are making the Taliesin experience again from a different angle. And so are you falling back in love with what you are doing?
You know, I think I've always been in love with what I'm doing. I've always been in love with it. And maybe with love comes challenges. But if it's a true love, you work through it, and it's better than ever. So it's like a good relationship. You know, you work through any bumps in the road, and then you come out better. So what that experience did for me was it validated what I was feeling inside. But seeing what Frank Lloyd Wright manifested in person, being able to touch it and be there, there's something about that spirit that gave me strength to go forward and be who I am. Not to be Frank Lloyd Wright. I'm not Frank Lloyd Wright, but to be who I am. Because Frank Lloyd Wright was who he was, despite all the naysayers and critics asking him, begging him, trying to force him to be not like he was. But he did it. And in his 80s and 90s, Frank Lloyd Wright, in his 80s and 90s, did a third of his built work with Guggenheim, Marin County, the Unitarian Meeting House, you know, the one with the prow that goes out like this. He did that in, 48? So he would have been 80 years old. The church in Madison with the prow that comes out, that every church in the 60s and 50s, 60s, 70s was modeled after. My little town here has 15 churches with the prow out like this. And he did that when he was 8.
Wow.
All right. So learning more about Frank Lloyd Wright's life and his incessant pursuit until the day he died. He was doing innovative things until the day he died. Gave me some strength and maybe even a model to look at in terms of my own longevity. One thing was clear to me: if I had kept the pace that I did in my 20s and 30s, I would be dead, and I'd probably be dead by now. But after that experience, I retooled the way I worked, and it hasn't been only me, because I've had employees and contract workers and people who can help with drafting, and people can. But I've kept the size down. I stopped wanting to be SOM or HOK. What I found is that the wider I got, the shallower I got. So I decided to go narrow and deep. And so take on less projects. Instead of taking on 50 projects a year, take on 3 to 5 projects a year.
That's right in line with what I'm trying to find out about people with flying solo, is that unique aspect, that intentionality. And so what specifically met that criteria to go deeper? Which clients and projects met that criteria?
Okay, that's, I think probably the number one rule, and I'm just going to state the rule as it is, and you can bleep this out if you want, is that I have an ironclad rule: never work with assholes. And so I don't work with people who have a negative spirit, I really like working with kind, thoughtful, considerate human beings. And I found that and I'm a collaborator. I'm a collaborator. So I'm not willing to match asshole for asshole. I'm not going to do it. But I will match love and thoughtfulness with a client all day long and come out feeling great. Otherwise, I mean, the developers and other individuals that I've worked with years ago, they're just completely draining. And really, the money's not worth it. And really, the money's not that much with people who don't appreciate what you do. So mainly people who appreciate what I do is who I work with. And if you don't appreciate, and I guess I've got that luxury because I've got a client base, and I have maybe a half a dozen people that just come to me every 2 or 3 years. So there's always things coming in. And if it's only me, I don't have to provide for the whole world. So I can be selective, and I can charge more for what I do because people appreciate it, and people are hiring me because it's me and it's because what I can do. That's my criteria: is I want to work with people who want to work with me.
And that's a wonderful goal. I think that leads into the question everyone asks, is that how do you find clients like that? And you kind of answered that already in terms of you did the hard work. You went out there and you put the world on fire with your awesome design, and you put yourself out there, and now you're taking back and you're able to cull from that just the few sparks numbers that give you a fire for the rest of your career because you've built those relationships over time the hard way. I don't know how else to say. I don't know if there's a shortcut.
And there's some battles in there on projects. And then the dust clears, and you know, a couple of years later, they say, "Hey, let's do it again."
Right.
I would say to that point, I would say that what I do is, Gandhi said it best: "Is be the change you want to see in the world." Okay. So what I do is I put my creativity out there. And like the album that I'm putting together, I'm putting my creativity out there in the music, in the graphics on the album. I've got a drawing on the album. The back, a good friend, master painter, did the cover. And so it's a creative project. It's the whole thing is, it's an art piece. But yeah. So what my strategy is, be my unique self that's helpful to humanity. And also, the intention is that it's filled with wonder and delight and merriment. And I want to give people an experience in my buildings. I want to take them someplace. And, I used to have a friend who's an organist, and a very, very fine organist. And I'd be listening to him, do a postlude or something at a service. And it, first of all, it felt like that he was landing airplanes, all right? But he would, the thing that came into mind, he could pick you up out of your pew, spin you around, float you back down, and sit you back down on your pew with his playing. But that's the intentionality that I try to put into architecture. But also the intentionality of matching up the architecture with the individual, and matching up the music with the individual. It's aligned. Putting out in the world what I do, my creative spark, my essence, and there are people who'll see that and yawn, and well, most people could care less. But the people that see it and go, "Wow, I connect with that." The more I can be of who I am, the stronger those connections are. Most people could care less. Very few people say, "Wow, this is really what I want." And those are the people. So what I do and what I'm putting into the world is, I think, magnetized. And I get those kind of clients coming to me. It's just like if you put scarcity into the world, then you're going to get clients that don't pay you.
They're reflecting that. We do reflect our clients. Yeah.
Personal responsibility is big with me. And I think as an architect, I mean, that's the way not to get sued. Just take responsibility for your actions. And it's the way to be in any relationship, I think, is to take responsibility for your actions. Everybody's human. Everybody messes up. And that's part of our humanity. And can you even call it messing up? You have kids, a baby learning to walk. Okay. Gets up, boom, falls down. Gets up, boom, falls. Is that a mistake? That's not a mistake. That's just another step in the process. And then all of a sudden it gets up and running and, hey, where'd that come from? Right.
Right. And I love how you describe how you're infusing your creativity in so many different mediums, just based on what you're passionate about. And it sounds just like Frank Lloyd Wright's school, requiring that people do multidisciplinary design elements because they feed on each other. You learn design and how to apply design at different scales, at different elements, at sound, as well as beauty of eye and how you hear the space and everything else. There's just resonance in how you're applying your creativity. And if you're intentional about it, you find the harmonics. The harmonics on a string are just incredible, that you're here and you're two octaves higher just because of the proportions and the scale and all the physics that go into music. You've identified it and you've tapped it lightly, and all of a sudden, different notes are coming out of your instrument. It's just beautiful. And so we want to find that in our lives as well and in our architecture.
Well, you know, interesting, you said resonance. That's my word for the year, is resonance. And that's what I look for, is when I'm putting out anything, does it resonate? Does it resonate? And then I work on it until it has some sort of resonance, and then let it go. So the takeaway on this Taliesin event. What I would like, my intention for this event is for us to come together as architects, as friends, as people who care about each other, but also care about what we're doing, and have a reset. Everybody's busy. Everybody is really busy. Everybody's too busy. But maybe that's the time to slow down for a couple of days, take in some music in an amazing space, a sensory, multi-sensory experience that you'll never forget. Come to the White School in the morning after, have some coffee, have some brunch, tour Taliesin. We're going to have a bluegrass concert the next evening. What I'd love for people to go away with an affirmation that they're doing what they're meant to do in this world, and with the aspiration of being their full self and being their unique, authentic self and pushing that on in the future. So it was 20 years ago, 25 years ago when I first went to Taliesin. And now a large part of the story is not there, obviously, between then and now. But now I'm putting out my first album, and I wrote all the music on it and recorded it, put together a band, really great band. All the musicians, literally, are way better than me. And I'm not kidding.
That's the best composer. The best composer puts people in the seats who need to be there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I've done a lot of practicing here over the last few years. So hopefully I won't disappoint people. But go away with a sense of, you know, I can do this because Entree Architect is a wonderful organization. It's a very supportive organization. There are people that if you ask them, they'll pour their heart and soul out. That, oh, I learned this. Here it is for you. And, right? That Entree Architect is that kind of. So I would like people to leave this with a sense of, yes, I can be my full self. And there are people around who will help me on that journey and help me celebrate that journey. So that part of this is I'm asking people to come and help me celebrate my journey. That's the selfish part. But I want people to go away inspired with the idea that they're where they need to be in their journey.
And I think I'm bringing my whole self to this event on June 8th, and I'm going to bring my whole family to June 9th because that is my whole self. And I felt like this experience, this Taliesin experience, is inviting me to be who I am, which is a mom and an architect and a woman of faith. And I can bring all that enjoy the music, enjoy the architecture, and draw and sketch this beautiful design and just learn from it. But not just the architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright, not just the beautiful scenery of Spring Green, Wisconsin, but also the community and the fact that I can be my whole self. I am not bringing my whole family this year to other conferences, but this conference, I was able to do that. I'm able to camp out in Spring Green. There's a great campground there. And I'm just so excited to be sharing that with them and be there with all the other architects who are coming and hear your music, because I would love to hear more about how you're composing all these beautiful pieces and what does it mean to design a building and then to design a music set?
Well, you know, I think about putting songs together, tunes together, like putting a building together. There's a basic structure to it. There's a time signature. There's a basic structure. There's a basic feel. The most important thing, though, which we touched on just a little while ago, is finding the nature of the thing. And the first thing, what's the nature? What's the true nature of the thing? And then once that, and that generally comes with a melody of what's the nature of the thing. And then everything that everything then that comes from that then springs from the melody.
Because I'm hearing so much in what you're doing. I'm hearing the interval changes that are copied and repeated. Just like the way you look at Frank Lloyd Wright's architecture, you see proportions repeated here and there at different scales. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing intervals. I'm hearing rhythms that are repeated in different ways with different speeds and different tempos. And it's a beautiful comparison between what Frank Lloyd Wright did to architecture and what bluegrass did to music as a movement.
You know, Bill Monroe, father of bluegrass, never, at least initially, never called it bluegrass. Bluegrass is a name that he called it the music. So it was very personal to him. It was something that came from him because he was the amalgamator. He created the sound that we know is of as bluegrass with the instrumentation, same instrumentation of my band, a bass, a double bass, a guitar, fiddle, banjo, mandolin. And he just called it the music because it was what he was putting out there. And a record company executive who wanted to sell more records said, we've got to have a name for this. And they slapped the name bluegrass on music. Somebody also slapped the name Prairie Style on Frank Lloyd Wright's Chicago houses. Well, the houses that were in the prairie. All right. And then so it's easy enough to take a style and like the prairie house in the mountains is comical. It's just, you know, the bluegrass or the music is in certain situations is great, in certain situations not. But this slapping the style on it to me just or a name on the style takes away. So I'm a little hesitant to call it bluegrass, although it is bluegrass. I tend to call it the music.
I like it, and I appreciate what you're saying about. Here's a musician who, like an architect, found resonance within himself and found a music that was just the, slapping the in front of what defines us and sharing that out into the world. I think it emphasizes what you're trying to do with Taliesin is inviting people to find their own resonance, to find their own purpose, and to align everything else from that core.
That's it. Find the essence. Find the essence, find the nature of the thing, and then everything that springs from that works. Okay, so Frank Lloyd Wright designed with a modular system in the sense that it might be a grid, a 4x4 foot grid, a 2x8 grid, squares. He would do triangles. He did even hexagons sometimes. So the grid is there. It's like a time signature in the music, in that you have the grid. And then the walls go on the grid, more or less. The major ones on the grid, the minor ones may go between the grid. The interesting house Chattanooga, the Shaven House. We did a concert there a month ago. One of the things I noticed about the grid was that the four by four grid, the windows were 4 feet apart, but not on the grid. They bisected the grid.
So just like syncopation. Yes.
It was a syncopated house. And I brought that up and the owner said, you know, I never really noticed that, but my father was a violinist and Mr. Wright designed this house for music. So there was a time signature in there and there's a syncopate. And I wrote a tune that I'll play at Taliesin called House Made for Music, which is a syncopated song that I wrote in that house that was directly from the architect, the geometry of the house, translated into the geometry of the music. But one fascinating thing, James Shildrick, who was an apprentice that went there in 59 or 60, like right after Wright died, I was talking to him about the grid that occurred in every house. He said, well, don't call it modular, don't call it grid, call it the unit system. It's the unit. You have these units and you put the walls on, you put the geometries, align the geometries to the units. So call it the unit system because it brings about unity. Mm. So when you have a time signature of like that little thing I played for you, and I didn't warm up, so I hit a couple of wrong notes, but that thing I played for you, it has a certain time signature, a certain vibe, a certain rhythm that goes through. And so the notes can be placed in there as whole notes, half notes, quarter notes, eighth notes. You keep subdividing the grid. Just like Frank Lloyd Wright kept subdividing the grid, we would go halfway in the middle of the grid to give it some interest and some character and some syncopation. So that's my approach to writing music, is how I, and all right, so people profess to know what Frank Lloyd Wright would think about this or that. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows, because he constantly surprised everybody. People who were closest to him did not know what he was going to come up with next. So me, it would be pretty arrogant to think that I knew how Frank Lloyd Wright would think. But just based on his buildings and looking at how I perceive those went together, then it becomes my own philosophy of how to put things together. And I'm drawing on that. And one of the things I think I notice in that is that, and he did speak about this a lot and write about this, finding the nature of the thing, and then letting everything come from the nature of the thing. So that's my music. That's my architecture, which is not like Frank Lloyd Wright's. It's my own thing. And that's how I approach work and life these days.
And so organic in architecture can mean a certain style, a certain look, but I don't think that's what you're intending with this album. With the album name being Organic Architecture, it feels like it's more about it being a living entity that you're bringing into being.
It's more of a feel, really. It's I like people to feel my buildings before they start noticing the parts. I like people to feel the music, and then it gets in the body and you start doing like this and you're feeling the music, and then you say, okay, there's a banjo in there, there's guitar in there, oh yeah, hear that bass line, yeah, oh yeah, yeah. But when you walk up, you're just feeling the vibe. You're feeling the vibe, and hopefully you're getting the communication is that you're getting the whole, that you're getting the nature of the thing. And then you can start picking up the parts, and the parts are delightful when the fiddle does a solo, the banjo does a solo. It's delightful. But it's part of that whole vibe. And everybody else is keeping the vibe, that same vibe, keeping that time signature, keeping that palette of materials the same as you go through. You have a certain palette of materials on every project. And if you go beyond that, it gets a little chaotic. if you don't have enough in your palate, it's a little boring. So a lot of analogies to architecture.
Absolutely. And in how you're resonating, how all these aspects are resonating in your life too. And so This is a year committed to a tour. Can you tell me a little bit about how you're starting this off and going into how are things going to fit in? How do you decide if something resonates? How do you decide if it's too much for your palate or if you can fit it into the mix?
Part of it's pragmatic, part of it's intuitive. There are certain things that are just really important, and it's like, okay, I'm going to do that. So we got the opportunity to perform at Falling Water, and that's actually the beginning of the tour is June 6th at Falling Water, which is a big homecoming because that building, more than anything, is responsible for me becoming an architect and incorporating music into architecture and writing this album and coming back to Falling Water. So it's kind of like an Escher drawing. Really, it just kind of, or a Mobius ring, it kind of returns on itself. Falling Water was important, Taliesin was important, and then I've got some Mississippi area stuff. We did the Chattanooga concert, doing Mississippi Museum of Art off Fountainhead, which is a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Jackson, Mississippi, an hour and a half from where I live. And so we're doing a concert there. And okay, you asked how to find clients. Alignment. We get aligned. So they bought the house, the Frank Lloyd Wright house. I'm coming out with an album about that's inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright and Bill Monroe. Bluegrass is big in Mississippi. And so I approached the museum. And we just basically talked alignment. And this concert came out of that. And it was a win-win. And they're raising money. They've already sold a bunch of tickets. Bill Ellison, the guy who, DJ who puts on the Grassroots, which is Mississippi Public Radio statewide bluegrass radio show. He did a shout out for the Mississippi Museum of Art event and played one of my tunes on. He's played several of my tunes on his show, which is real heady. My singles that are out are getting played on Mississippi Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio, various community radio stations around the country. And now with the album coming out, there's going to be a big push. So fingers crossed, we'll get some airtime and some play and maybe even some. And here's what I'd love to happen from the tunes. The album is inspired by a Bill Monroe album called Master of Bluegrass, which was all instrumentals. So this album is all instrumentals. And what I would love to happen with this is for some of those instrumentals to become jam songs at bluegrass festivals, because that's a big part of the music culture in bluegrass is you take your instrument to the festivals and you go see the bands you want to see, but all the rest of the time you're playing with your friends in the campground. And so having these, putting some songs into, creating songs that have enough of an earworm effect that they get into the jam cycle is one thing that I'd love to see happen. So I'm putting together a tour that makes sense economically and with Entree Architect. That's what makes Taliesin possible. Doing a homecoming concert back in Hattiesburg after the five concert tour. So looking forward to that. And then there's some possibilities for Taliesin West later on in the year, and that's not nailed down yet. We're going to see how the finances work out on this tour before we decide on that.
I love how you talked about the jam sessions. You introduced me to a jam session when we did an Entree Architect event in Nashville. And it was just part of being in the music, the way that we love to teach people how to be in a building and learn from the building, a jam session felt like that. It was learning from the music and responding to the music with, for me, the little bongos he let me tool around with. And it was just so enjoyable to communicate with other people through this different medium and just to hang out and jam.
So that reminds me of a couple of years ago, a German friend of mine came through, and I spent some time with him. And I met him in Ireland at a restaurant, and my wife's vegan. We were looking for a good vegan restaurant. We kind of found one and looking at the menu, and he said, "Hey, would you like our table? I've just paid the check." And so, "Oh, thanks. Where are you from?" He said, "Germany." He said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Mississippi." And I don't know why he said this, but he said, "Oh, do you know, do you play bluegrass?" And, you know, bluegrass is more Appalachian, but Mississippi is more blues. And he said, and I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, do you?" He said, "Yeah." And so we said, "Well, let's meet at the music store a block away and in an hour." And jam. So we met there and we played the same music. We knew the same music and we played for an hour there at the music store. So he came over to the U.S. and I picked him up in Nashville. We went by Gruen's Guitars, which is incredible guitars. We were up on the second floor looking at the really good guitars. And Earl Scruggs, banjo player, who made bluegrass. He was in the original bluegrass band. His sound is the bluegrass banjo sound. They had his guitar, his Martin D28 or D45 guitar that he has on many records. Primarily a banjo player, but he played guitar too. And so he was playing that. It was good. David Luca, really good guitar player. He was playing this. The guy, a luthier that was there, that met us up there, who was doing some work on an instrument of mine, he came out and brought out that guitar. And of course, this is like the Holy Grail, you know, and he's playing this. And so the luthier picks up a guitar and they're playing and they're passing licks back and forth. And they speak in different languages, completely different languages. And they finished up a passage, and he said, "This is all I need to know about this guy. I love this guy. This is all. We haven't even said a word."
That is incredible.
Yeah, that's the power of music. That's the power of architecture. But also, that's the power of intention. And that's the power of resonance.
James, thank you. This has been a wonderful talk session. I felt like we jammed about different topics with architecture and music. I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast and sharing just in this moment leading up to an incredible summer of music and travel and architecture. I just wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me riff on some things. And love what you're doing. And so keep it up. And thank you.
Thanks, James. And so where can people go to find out about this?
So the link, I can't give you the link. I can send you the link, but I can't give you the link. Well, let's post the link. Let's post the link. It's an Entree Architect in the Entree Architect Network, but it's too long of a link to.
Right. Yeah. All right. So links to all your stuff are going to be included in these show notes and in these posts, and just let's get it out there and gather.
Link to my stuff. My website is musicinarchitecture.com. That's musicinarchitecture.com is my website.
And where can we listen to you on Spotify or Apple Music?
Just type in James Ray Paul and on June 6th, you can type in James Ray Polk and the Mississippi Sawyers, because that's when my new album is landing. I've got three singles out from the album, so you can go to any platform and type James Ray Polk in and get those singles. And June 6th, you can get the whole album.
Love it. Thanks, James. I found so many moments of resonance during this conversation with James Ray Polk. The life he is modeling seems almost mythical. He is writing his own legend, which is why I couldn't help but compare him to a phoenix. the legendary bird of fire and rebirth. Just like the phoenix, James didn't stop at burnout. He reset, and what emerged from the ashes was closer to his true essence. He was able to rediscover his first love of architecture through Frank Lloyd Wright and reconnect with music through the Taliesin Chorus. And that leads to our first takeaway. Sometimes we need to reset back to our default settings. When James did a complete reset 20 years into his career, he didn't become someone new. He returned to a way of life where he could be himself. When James saw Taliesin, he remembered first seeing Frank Lloyd Wright architecture as a teenager and thinking that architecture could have a soul, a deeper meaning, an essence that drove the design. And finding that essence is the second takeaway. Because when you find the essence, everything else grows from it. We discussed how this essence lies behind the rhythm and logic of architecture. It lies in the melody and vibe of music. And it can be the driving force behind our own lives, influencing the type of projects and clients we serve as soul practitioners. James shared how he doubled down on his essence in his work, his music, his art, his travel, and the relationships he builds. We talked about it like a magnet. He magnetizes his life with deeper meaning, which leads to our final takeaway. Putting your true self into the world creates resonance. James presents his essence in his music, his architecture, his stories, and admits that people will simply yawn at it. Many will, but he isn't aiming to please the masses. He's doing all this to find resonance with his tribe, his people. It's like building a campfire to invite people in. It's writing your own myth, your own legend. It's the freedom found in being a soul practitioner, in flying solo. We get to define how many projects are needed. We define how our business can best serve others. And we can do that by being our best selves and adding our creativity to the world. My hope is that you can join us for this Entree Architect experience at Taliesin on June 8th in Spring Green, Wisconsin. This will be a time to reset, reconnect with that core essence, the things that inspire all that we do. And when we tap into that essence, we may discover unity and resonate better with our clients. And we may find connections with other architects who want to see us thrive. From the ashes, a phoenix arises anew. If this podcast finds you when you feel like you are at your lowest, I hope you will be able to let the chaff burn. And whatever's left, at the core, may you find your true essence. And like a reborn phoenix, may you fly again. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live. That's flyingsolo.live for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entree Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins, proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.